This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Sonia Zisky sat in a chair in front of a CBS News camera and did something nobody in this family has done since Anna Kempner was found dead on that cruise ship. She pointed a finger at the adults. Not at the 16-year-old charged with the first-degree murder. Not at the federal prosecutors or the FBI. She pointed at Anna's father, Christopher Kempner, and her own stepdaughter, Chantel Kempner. The two people who planned this vacation, who booked the rooms, who put three teenagers in a stateroom together and went to sleep across the hall. Zisky is Timothy Hudson's step-grandmother. She says she helped raise the boy now charged with killing his stepsister. And she went on national television and said the world, or said the word that has been burning in every comment section, every direct message, every conversation about this case since November, charges. She wants Christopher and Chantel Kempner charged for what she called a lack of parental supervision on a floating city, for putting teenagers who, quote, were not raised together in the same room, for what she says was alcohol, for what she says were missing medications, for what she calls a recipe for disaster. And she's not alone. That instinct, the one that says the adults in that hallway bear some responsibility for what happened in that room, lives in millions of people following this case. The fury is real. The question of accountability is legitimate, but fury and a viable criminal charge are two very different animals, and this is an honest look at both. Your thoughts in the comment section as we work through this. Substack and YouTube links are in the description. Press subscribe wherever you're listening or watching. And if you are watching us on YouTube and you want to take us on the road so you can hear us on your commutes, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Wherever you get podcasts, hit subscribe and you got us there too. The allegations against the parents didn't start with Zisky. They started with a Brevard County family courtroom in November of 2025 when Thomas Hudson, Timothy's biological father, filed an emergency custody petition alleging that Chantel had, quote, failed to properly supervise, unquote, the children on a cruise he never approved. His attorney told the court that the teenagers had given their own room or had been given their own room and were allegedly allowed to drink. Just a lot of circumstances that showed that the mother in this case was not exercising appropriate supervision, his attorney said. Chantel Kempner's attorney fired back hard. She told the court that surveillance video from the ship confirmed absolutely no drinking. The parents had denied providing alcohol to the teenagers. That dispute, drinking or no drinking, remains unresolved in the public record. Both sides are adamant neither has been tested under cross-examination in the criminal proceeding. But here's what isn't disputed. The room arrangement. Anna Kempner, 18 years old, shared a stateroom with her 16-year-old stepbrother, Timothy Hudson, and her 13-year-old biological brother. The parents stayed across the hall with the younger children. Court documents from the unsealed detention hearing lay out the timeline of November 6 with surveillance precision. Anna returned to her cabin after dinner around 7:38 p.m., complaining of a stomach ache. Hudson was already inside, allegedly. At 7:51 p.m., Anna's 13-year-old brother entered briefly, saw Anna in the room, and left. He would not return to stay until after 11:21 p.m., more than 3 hours later. During that window, according to prosecutors, Anna and Timothy were alone in that cabin. Nobody checked in. Nobody knocked on the door. Nobody called. When the 13-year-old brother did return around 11:21, he told the FBI he didn't see his sister. He assumed she'd gone to be with their parents, and he went to sleep. Later, around 12:09 a.m., when he tried to come back into the room again, prosecutors say Hudson stuck his arm to block the doorway and yelled that he was changing. The boy noticed it was strange that every light in the cabin was on. Sat in the hallway, waited until Hudson let him in. Then that 13-year-old boy slept in that room for approximately 9 hours, while according to prosecutors, Anna's body lay hidden under the bed next to him, wrapped in a blanket and concealed beneath life vests. That's the factual foundation underneath the rage. 13-year-old sleeping feet from his dead sister's body because no adult was paying close enough attention to notice that anything was wrong. That's what Sonia Ziski means when she says recipe for disaster. And for millions of people, that feels like enough to charge somebody. The comparison everyone reaches for is the Crumbly case out of Michigan. James and Jennifer Crumbly, the first parents in American history convicted of involuntary manslaughter for the mass shooting committed by their child. Their 15-year-old son, Ethan, killed four classmates at Oxford School in 2021. Both parents were convicted, both sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison. The Crumbly prosecution changed the legal landscape. It proved that under the right facts, parents can be held criminally responsible when their child commits murder. But those facts matter enormously. And they're almost surgically different from what is alleged in the Kempner case. The Crumblies purchased the firearm their son used to kill 4 days before the shooting. They gave it to him as a gift. On the morning of the massacre, a teacher found a drawing on Ethan's desk, a gun, a figure with bullet holes, the words, "The thoughts won't stop, help me." The school called the parents in for a meeting. They were asked to take Ethan home. They refused. They did not tell school officials their son had access to a weapon. Hours later, four students were dead. The prosecution in that case proved the Crumblies provided the direct instrument of harm and ignored documented specific escalating warnings that their son was dangerous. They didn't just fail generally as parents. They handed their child a gun. We're told he was drawing pictures of murder and walked away. In the Kempner case, the alleged parental failures are a room assignment and possible access to alcohol in a cruise ship. Putting teenagers in the same room is a bad call that millions of blended families make every vacation season without anyone being killed. There is no public evidence, none, that Christopher or Chantel Kempner received a specific warning that Timothy Hudson posed a violent threat before they boarded that ship. No documented behavioral red flags brought to their attention. No one pulling them aside and saying, "This kid is dangerous." Now, one could argue they ignored some of those signs from an ex-boyfriend, other people. But again, those are claims made after the fact. Not necessarily something that's documented that can be proven in court. And that's what we're talking about here. If you're talking about charges, you can't go on feelings, you can't go on rumors, you can't go on, "I said this, but it's not really documented that you did this or that." That's what matters if you're going to charge someone. I'm not saying, I mean, look, I'm looking at this too enraged, going, "What is wrong with you?" But again, does it reach a level of criminal culpability? Under our current system, the answer is probably no. Should it? It just depends how lenient you want to get with the law. There is one thread that complicates this picture. Anna's ex-boyfriend told Inside Edition that her younger brother said she'd been scared of her stepbrother, that she would sleep at friends' houses to avoid being around him, that there was alleged prior incidents of unwanted physical contact. And if that's true, if the parents knew, then the question of foreseeability starts to shift. That's no longer general bad judgment. That's something closer to what the Crumblies ignored. But it is fundamentally different in a lot of ways. Right now, that information is secondhand. A teenager related to an ex-boyfriend who related to a television camera. It hasn't surfaced in sworn testimony. At least not yet. Be interesting to see what comes up in sworn testimony in this trial. And if you are playing along at home of children and parents being charged, quite often the child's case goes through first. And then a DA may look at this and go, "You know what? I think we might want to get them too." If there's sufficient evidence. If any, bad parenting, yeah. Criminal? I think some arguments could be made. Whether they stand up to the law, again, that'd be for a court to decide. Because as of right now, there is no public evidence it was ever communicated to Christopher or Chantel Kempner. There's claims, but there's no evidence. And this is the distance between Anna told her ex-boyfriend she was uncomfortable and the parents knew she was in danger and put her in that room anyway. That distance is the entire gap a criminal prosecution would have to close. And as of now, nobody has closed it. But even if you could close the factual gap, even if evidence surfaced that the parents were warned and did nothing, you would still run into a wall that has nothing to do with what happened in that room. And it was the wall is jurisdictional. The crime happened on the Carnival Horizon, a vessel registered to Panama, sailing in international waters. That's why the case is in federal court in the Southern District of Florida. Federal prosecutors have authority to charge serious crimes involving U.S. nationals on the high seas under Title 18, Section 7 of the United States Code. That's how they're processing or prosecuting Timothy Hudson for first-degree murder. That there's no federal contributing to the delinquency of a minor statute. That charge doesn't exist in the federal criminal code. It's a creature of state law. And in Florida, it lives in section 827.04, a first-degree misdemeanor carrying the maximum of 1 year in jail. The mechanism that normally bridges that gap is called the Asmislative Crimes Act, a federal law that borrows state criminal statutes into federal jurisdiction when no federal law covers the conduct. It works on military bases, it works in national parks, it works in federal courthouses, but it was designed for federal property on American soil, land that the government reserved or acquired, whether it extends to the Panamanian-flagged cruise ship in the middle of the Caribbean is a legal question that, as far as publicly available case law reveals, has never really been tested for this purpose. A federal prosecutor trying to charge the Kempner parents would be building an unprecedented misdemeanor case on untested jurisdictional theory against parents who deny the key factual allegations, while simultaneously preparing a first-degree murder trial set for September. Even former Palm Beach State Prosecutor Dave Ehrenberg, who's been following this case as a legal commentator for CBS News, framed the question carefully. The issue, he said, is whether the parents did something or failed to do something that enabled the crime. And his conclusion was blunt. He doesn't know if there are enough facts to sustain that charge. The assessment was made before you even get to the jurisdictional problem. That brings us to the core of all this. The place where the emotional case and the legal case split apart and go in different directions. Even if you solve the jurisdiction problem, even if you find a creative legal vehicle, even if you prove the parents knew Anna was afraid of Hudson and put her in that room anyway, you still have to prove criminal causation. You have to draw a line from the parents' decision and decisions to Anna Kempner's death that a jury would accept beyond a reasonable doubt. Florida's contributing to delinquency statute requires showing that the parents act cause, tended to cause, encourage, or contributed to a child becoming delinquent. The chain the prosecution would need to build goes like this. The parents place the teenagers in a room together, allegedly allowed alcohol access, allegedly failed to ensure medication, and those decisions caused or contributed to a first-degree murder. That's a canyon. A room assignment is a risk factor, not a proximate cause. The act of putting teenagers in the same stateroom, even teenagers who weren't raised together, does not foreseeably lead to one of them killing the other. And according to them, there was the option for her to go to another room. I'm not blaming her. I'm just saying this isn't a case, it appears, where they can say, and you have no choice. You're going to be in this room. No, it was, if you want to go stay with grandma and grandpa, you can do that. There's a difference when it comes to what happened here and parsing out the possibilities. The Crumbleys didn't just create a risky environment. They provided the murder weapon and were told in writing that their child was fantasizing about killing people. That's specificity. That's a direct line between the parents' act and the harm. What's alleged against the Kempners is a pattern of general negligence. And general negligence, no matter how enraging, does not typically sustain criminal charges when the intervening act is a murder allegedly committed by someone else. I mean, think about what a defense attorney would do with this in a courtroom. The parents didn't know. The parents weren't warned. The parents had no reason to believe that putting their kids in a room together would result in anyone's death. A room full of teenagers on a cruise ship is not a loaded gun in an unlocked drawer. The analogy collapses under its own weight. So if criminal charges are functionally off the table, and based on the publicly available evidence and the jurisdictional landscape, they kind of appear to be, the question becomes what accountability is actually available. Civil liability is a different conversation entirely. In a civil case, a standard drops from beyond a reasonable doubt to preponderance of the evidence. More likely than not, wrongful death suits and negligence claims operate unforeseeability and duty of care, and the bar is dramatically lower than the criminal causation. Plus, if you would think of who might bring a suit like that, they're not going to sue themselves. If Anna's family or her estate pursued civil claims against the adults who arranged the cruise, who made the room arrangements, who allegedly failed to supervise, the legal system is built for exactly that kind of case. And Carnival Cruise Line faces its own potential civil exposure for policies around minors, room assignments, alcohol service to near underage passengers, and the adequacy of its own safety protocols. There's also the custody arena, which has been active since weeks after Anna died. Thomas Hudson's emergency petition, the hearings about the remaining children's welfare, the questions about fitness to parent. Family court is designed to answer the exact questions Sona Zisky is asking about whether these parents shouldn't have custody of their own children. And it's already working on those answers. But a criminal courtroom, a federal prosecutor in Miami deep into preparation for a first-degree murder trial, is not going to divert resources to pursue an unprecedented misdemeanor theory on a jurisdictional framework that's never been tested. Even if the political end of it existed, even if the public pressure was enormous, the legal foundation is simply not there. Sorry. I know. And I'm not saying that the parents did anything criminal and then should be a press. I'm saying here's where it lands, everybody. I get the rage. I feel it. Here's the hard truth about accountability in the Anna Kempner case. Sona Zisky is not wrong to be angry. The audience is not wrong to want more people held responsible. The instinct that says two parents sleeping across the hall while their 13-year-old wandered a cruise ship alone and their 18-year-old was allegedly attacked and killed in the next room, that instinct says someone else failed here too. It is grounded in something real. It is grounded in a room arrangement that defied common sense. It is grounded in a supervision gap that lasted hours. It is grounded in a 13-year-old boy who slept next to his dead sister's body because nobody knew anything was wrong. But the criminal justice system doesn't run on instinct. It runs on elements, jurisdiction, causation, proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And in this case, a Panamanian-flagged vessel in international waters, no federal contributing to delinquency statute, an untested jurisdictional bridge, no documented evidence, the parents knew Hudson posed a specific threat, and an intervening act that is an alleged first-degree murder committed by someone else, the vehicle for criminal charges against the parents does not exist. That doesn't mean nothing should happen. It means the accountability is demanding, that Sona Zisky is demanding, will more likely come from a civil courtroom than a criminal one. It means the family court system may be where the real questions about Christopher and Chantel Kempner's fitness as parents get answered. And it means that when Zisky sat in front of that camera and said what she said, she wasn't speaking as a legal analyst. She was speaking as a grandmother who watched a family disintegrate and who believes the adults in charge failed every child on that ship. The law may not be able to give her what she's asking for, but the question she's asking, who else is responsible, is a question this case will carry all the way to trial and beyond. Your thoughts in the comments section. System working as it is designed? Clearly, it seems to be. But does the design need to change? Weigh in. Comment section, Substack, and YouTube. The links are in the description. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.